Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Endeavour Silver second quarter 2026 financial results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are on listen-only mode and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may reach an operator by pressing star then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Alison Pettit, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. Before we get started, I ask that you view our MD&A for cautionary language regarding forward-looking statements and the risk factors pertaining to these statements. Our MD&A and financial statements are available on our website at edrsilver.com. On today's call, we have Dan Dickson, Endeavour Silver's CEO, and Elizabeth Senez, our CFO. Following Dan's formal remarks, we will open the call for questions. And now, over to Dan.
Thanks, Allison, and welcome, everyone. Endeavour Silver's second quarter performance reflects the strength of our operations with increased production, record metal sales, and a meaningful improvement in mine operating cash flow. Terronera's ramp-up and the higher throughput achieved at Kolpa, together with our strong cash position, gives us a solid base to continue advancing our growth plans throughout the remainder of the year. In Q2, Endeavour produced nearly 2 million ounces of silver and over 10,000 ounces of gold, totaling 3 million silver equivalent ounces. This represents a 36% increase compared to Q2 2025. We reported revenue of $212 million, an increase of 150% compared to prior year, with mine operating earnings of $74 million, again higher than the $7 million in Q2 2025, and mine operating cash flow of $100 million before taxes, a 300% increase from Q2 2025. Our all-in sustaining costs net of byproduct credits were $37 this quarter, representing a 47% increase from Q2 2025. Profitability has significantly increased our operating costs with increased royalties, purchased material, profit sharing, and mining taxes. With increased profitability, we continue to invest in sustaining capital costs, especially compared to prior period. In Q2, Endeavour recognized an adjusted net earnings of $45 million, or an adjusted net earnings per share of 15 cents. Changes in the metal price have a meaningful impact on our direct costs per ton. For example, for every $1 increase in silver ounce, costs per ton rise by about 90 cents at Terronera, $3.80 at Guanaceví, and 50 cents at Kolpa due to the higher royalties, mining duties, third party purchase ore, and fairly required profit sharing. Direct operating costs per ton were 14% higher this quarter compared to Q2 last year, as the Mexican peso has appreciated and put pressure on inputs impacting our costs. During the first quarter, Kolpa installed and commissioned a new three-stage crusher and ball mill, increasing plant capacity to 2,500 tons per day. Additional expansion expenditures remain, along with capital improvement initiatives, including the expansion of the tailings storage facility to accommodate the increased plant capacity, construction of a new water treatment plant, new power substations required to support current and future operating levels, as well as upgrades to the camp accommodations aimed at attracting and retaining skilled miners in Peru. Management continues to evaluate the long-term capital needs of Kolpa and has increased the 2026 budget by $18 million to bring projects forward and meet company and Peruvian recommendations. At Terronera, daily throughput remained consistent as the processing plant focused on metal recoveries. Silver grades were in line with plan for the quarter and are expected to increase during the second half of the year as mining operations access our higher grade areas. Further progress is expected on recoveries as the grinding circuit continues to find efficiencies and to meet the design criteria. With higher grade areas and other ramp up efficiency initiatives such as the LNG plant commissioning and the waste dump 2 development, management expects an incremental decrease in Terronera's cost per ton throughout the second half of the year. Exploration drilling also restarted at Terronera, making it the first drill program at the mine since 2020, and is aimed at expanding and better defining mineralization along strike and depth within the Terronera vein and defining the limits of mineralization near historical workings to support mine design and long-term planning at Lovins. For more details, we released initial results on June 18th, and you can find them on our website. Gowanus City incurred higher direct costs per ton this quarter, largely due to the higher volume and cost of third-party material purchased, which have become more expensive on a per-ton basis due to the higher prices. The higher metal prices also drove higher royalties, special mining duty payable for the period. The higher prices have allowed the operating team to mine lower grade zones, ultimately extending mine life, and we do expect higher grade areas to come in line in the near future, increasing grades from current levels. Drilling continued throughout Q2 at Gowanus B as well, focusing on underground diamond drilling in deeper parts of the Alondra, Porvenir, Dos and El Malache areas, and we continued to test Santa Cruz vein and look for additional extensions to the north. As of June 30th, 2026, we had a cash position of $236 million, working capital of $214 million, providing a strong and stable foundation to advance our ongoing initiatives. We continue to advance the Pit 3 feasibility study, which is expected at the end of Q3, with economic information being collected, with drafts expected shortly for management. In closing, Endeavour delivered a strong second quarter, supported by higher production, record metal sales, improved mine operating cash flow, and strengthened balance sheet. With the Kulpa expansion now achieving higher throughput, Terronera continued to advance through its ramp-up, and the advancement of the Pitarrilla feasibility study underway, we are well-positioned to build on this momentum through the second half of the year and into next year. Thank you for your continued support and engagement, and with that, I'm happy to open up for questions. Operator, let's please proceed to the Q&A session.
Thank you. To join the question queue, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. The first question comes from Heiko Ihle with H.C. Wainwright. Please go ahead.
Hey, Dan and team. Thanks for taking my questions.
Hey, Heiko. How are you?
Back on the Not too bad. I went back on the Terronera environmental website this morning that you guys have set up, you know, the terronera.com. Obviously, commissioning at the site began a month ago, and then you did mention an incremental decrease in costs during the second half. So just a couple of questions based on that. Were there any bottlenecks or costs that you didn't anticipate so far during the commissioning, or anything else that didn't come in as anticipated?
For our LNG plant, we commissioned it in June. I wouldn't say there was anything particularly unexpected. Just going through permitting, it took a longer time. And if you recall, we might have talked about this on past calls or past meetings, but there was an LNG spill in Mexico City in November, December of 2025. And that impacted us having to put together additional emergency response plans for LNG to be transported to our site, which actually right now is coming out of the state of Chihuahua and eventually will come from Guadalajara. We had to do that, and then we actually had to increase our permit around storage, again, all related to some of the incidents that had happened around the country. But from commissioning standpoint of our actual LNG plant, it went very smoothly, just took longer than expected just because of the permitting.
Yep. Okay. And then to be clear, the LNG plan obviously supplies the land and the buildings, but then it also says that that it gives loads to four portals of the mine water management system. All those are now connected, or what's the timeline to actually finish this off?
Yeah, no, it's a very good question, actually. So our lower platform is what we connected first, and that happened early June. At end of June, we connected the upper platform. So effectively, the whole plant was connected by the end of the quarter. And here in August, it's coming up. By August 15th, we'll have the mine connected to LNG generation system. So right now, the mine remains on its diesel gen sets, and we've just had boreholes go through, and we're actually running the line this week. So hopefully we're connected before mid-month, but at this point, it's ongoing.
Fair enough. And then just conceptually, I mean, you guys got, you know, close to $250 million in cash. I remember when this company didn't have a market cap of that size. And probably aging myself here a little bit, just thinking out loud, I mean, where do you think, what's the limit or what's the necessary bottom right now in regards to cash balance? And then building on that, at what point should one even maybe, you know, think out loud and maybe see like a special dividend, especially once you're done with all the capital expenditures that, you know, are coming towards you over the next couple of quarters?
Yeah, I mean, we often get that question, Heiko. It's ultimately a resource allocation and what we do with that. And there will be a time that we return money to shareholders, either through a dividend, share buyback. I think the growth plans that we have as a company over the next 5 years is still pretty substantial. We obviously have our convertible debt that sits long-term, and that's about $350 million that one day will be paid back. If our share price is at $12.45 and that gets converted, that gets converted. Ultimately, Pizzeria and the feasibility study that we have coming out, hopefully here by the end of September, and have information publicly for that, dictates what we're going to do with that capital. And that feasibility study, we fully expect to be very positive, and we expect to build costs somewhere in $500, $600 million range. And we don't have that CapEx number yet, but just management's kind of expectation being around that, that cash flow that we're generating and the cash that we have on our balance sheet, it will ultimately be earmarked for Pizzeria. Now, Pizzeria, if we can have that built by 2030, ultimately now you're a company of a scale that can look at dividends or share buybacks, and that's when we start talking about returning capital to shareholders.
Perfect. Okay. That's it. I don't want to hold up the question queue too long here, so thanks for taking the questions. I'll get back in line.
Thanks for the questions, Heiko.
The next question comes from Wayne Lam with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys. Maybe first question, just on the grades of Terronera. Just wanted to get a bit more detail. If we look back to the commercial production announcement last October, you guys had guided to a six-month period where you were moving through the lower grade development ore to get to the higher grade zones. So I just wanted to know kind of what the expectation is now with the commentary that you're going to get into higher grades. Is that something that we should expect a step change immediately into Q3, or is there still more of a ramp up? And then just with the mine plan in year one, having silver grades north of 200 gram per ton and gold grades at almost 4 gram, should we kind of start to model that into the back half of the year, or just wondering if there's any additional commentary you can provide us in terms of, you know, what we should expect going forward and what you've seen so far through the month of July.
Yep. I'll answer your second question first. That's okay, Wayne. So as far as you're going back to the feasibility study when you have the 4 gram gold that's coming through, and that's related to La Luz. In our feasibility study, from IRR standpoint and payback periods, your highest grade material starts in day one. From practicality standpoints, we obviously didn't go with that. Obviously, the price is completely different than what we did our feasibility study at, which was at $17 silver. We didn't want to have grade end up in our ounces end up in our tailings storage facility, and made the decision mid-year last year that we'd go after lower grade material, and that would happen until about mid-year this year. La Luz came out of that plan last year, and now it's kind of earmarked for Q1, Q2 of next year. Ultimately, we spent time drilling that out. We've pushed that resource to depth a little bit. Our one rig that's been on site has been drilling Terronera, and it's going back to La Luz in August to see if we can continue to find the bottom of La Luz. And that's all designed around so we can properly mine design La Luz so we can be most efficient. And we've kind of gone back and forth between long hole and cut and fill. The long way to say that ultimately that high-grade gold isn't in our plan for 2026. It's in our plan for 2027. So that's why you've seen that gold run around 2 compared to the feasibility study that's running 4. The 200 gram silver is really coming from that Terronera chute. There's a chute that goes from southeast to northwest, plunging towards northwest, that is our high-grade material. We put out drill results, as I said, in June 18th that kind of pushed that plunging chute towards the northwest, and we've actually come into that a little bit sooner. We are starting sill development now. We've seen some of our grades come up already in July, but I think it's going to be incremental increases July, August to September. We still do have some grade in the low-grade zones. We have some mineral that we're mining that's outside of our resource that if we don't take it, we're not going to get it. So that's going to slightly impact it, but we should see an increase in silver grade in the second half of the year and ultimately in Q3. Specific timings on July, August, September, it's going to give or take 3-4 weeks. It's a very small time period, but ultimately I would expect to see higher grades, silver grades in Q3 than we saw in Q2, which has always been the plan.
Okay, thanks. That's pretty good detail. Maybe just shifting to the costs, just wondering on the AISC performance through H1, which, you know, you had noted some of the pressures that you'd been seeing. But just curious, you know, with the performance through the first half of the year, and with the silver price, kind of pushing, you know, some of those factors, higher, how are you thinking about your AISC guidance and, how should we be thinking about the, improved efficiencies and the decline in sustaining capital spend into H2? Like, just wondering if that guidance is still realistic given the performance to date.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing because the amount of variables that go into your all-in sustaining costs. When we put out our guidance, we use $38 silver price or $36 silver price and ultimately build everything off that. And that actually steps back to when we start our process for planning in basically Q3 of 2025, and so we're sitting around that. And obviously a huge change that's happened. We also provide all those sensitivities in that guidance, and so it's difficult for whatever price you guys are using or different analysts have different prices, obviously. Right now, with the increased sustaining CapEx that we have at Kolpa, is offset by the byproduct credits that we're getting from lead, zinc, silver, some of the efficiencies we're getting. So there's a lot going in. We haven't changed our guidance on that all-in sustaining costs, and clearly where we're sitting is much higher than our guidance, and that's going to continue because of the higher prices.
Okay, great. And then maybe just lastly on the hedging strategy, can you give us a bit of detail on the go-forward hedging program on the Mexican peso? And then just with the higher costs at Guanaceví, I know you have the hedging in place currently from the build, but is there any thought to hedging silver price a bit further out to protect the margins at Guanaceví?
Hi, I'll take that one. So on the foreign exchange hedging, all of the foreign exchange hedges that we put in as per the build have been unwound. But yes, we are doing foreign exchange hedging for the operating costs that are denominated in peso for Guanaceví, and that also reflects on Terronera as well. With the stronger peso, we've not put any in the last 3 months, but that book's sitting pretty healthy for us, and our plan generally is to hedge the peso a small amount to tolerate any significant shifts in the price of the peso as it moves around. On the metal hedging, all the silver collars unwound in June and were paid out July 2nd. And then the gold hedges stream out to the end of June of next year. So we've got another year of gold hedges to pay out. And at this time, we have no plans to do any further metal hedging.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thanks for the questions, Wayne.
The next question comes from Cosmos Xu with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, Dan and team. Maybe, again, a question on the all-in sustaining cost. You know, Dan, as you said, it's quite complex in terms of forecasting and guiding to all-in sustaining costs. And we talked about the different variables in terms of commodity price assumptions. But how about inflation? Can you remind us, you know, what kind of inflationary assumptions you have made? I think kind of, you know, the realized inflation, is this kind of what you had expected, or is it higher? And, you know, how should we factor that in as we look at all-in sustaining cost?
Yeah, thanks, Cos. It's a good question. And ultimately, the inflation that we looked at, obviously different for a lot of things. Our labor, we had a planned 5% increase in labor, and I think that's effectively where we settled, maybe a little bit higher by points. Our initial plan, when we go through our budgeting process, I think last year we had about 3% inflation. Obviously, everything is different with what's happened in the Strait of Hormuz and the impact on diesel prices, and not necessarily specific to us because we're captured a little bit in Mexico where Pemex controls that a little bit, but obviously those prices impact our supplies and that gets passed down the chain. We're seeing a little bit more of that in the second quarter than obviously we saw in the first quarter. How long that continues, is that long-term inflation, short-term inflation? I don't think we need to get into that here, but ultimately mm-hmm. I expect it's 4%.
Okay. You know, as I look at the individual unsustaining costs, and the one that's, you know, much higher than what you had expected is Guanacevi. I think in large part due to a higher cost of purchasing third-party ore. Is that, could you maybe talk about that strategy? Like, you know, how much the third-party ore, how much is that actually adding to your unsustaining cost? Because your unsustaining cost is over $50 an ounce, and that's almost touching
spot. Yeah. There's two parts to that cost. Okay. Ultimately, our all-in sustaining costs at Guanacevi are higher because we're also seeing on a per-ton basis, and I'll come back to the per-ton basis based off it, but our grades have been lower than planned out of Guanacevi. Okay. The grades lower than planned mean on a per-ounce basis, the cost goes up on a per-ounce basis, right? We're getting 8 ounces instead of 10 ounces out of that ton, and that's pretty straightforward. And ultimately, we're going into lower-grade areas anywhere in El Curso, back into Port Bernardos, and then ultimately we're actually moving towards Malachi where grades will come up. The idea of going after those lower grade ounces is because we have a 2-year mine life right now at Guanacevi, and obviously that extends mine life. The idea of the purchased ore in that area, there's a number of different family-run operations in Guanacevi. It's a quilt system. We control a large part of the claims at Guanacevi, but there's a lot of family claims and a couple small miners and mills in that area as well. Around us is also Frisco, which we obviously have the NSR, the 16% NSR. With higher prices, we pay higher royalties. That goes into our all-in sustaining costs. The special mining duty, the profits that we're making at Guanacevi go into our all-in sustaining costs. Of course, all that. And so it's a little bit of everything at Guanacevi is why our all-in sustaining costs are higher than what we guided. Lower grades, higher prices that drive profit sharing, purchased ore. The purchased ore in this quarter, I think it was 21%, maybe even a bit higher than that. But it has been increasing to about 11,000, 12,000 tons came through in the quarter. And that's just, again, a function of the higher prices mean more family operations can open up areas and they're making more profit and they're delivering more material. That material, when you're buying it at $50, increases. So our cost per ton on an all-in basis, so we call it our direct costs, which includes royalties and purchase ore, is $400. $130 of that $400 is purchased ore. Right. Yeah. So over 25% of our cost is related to purchase ore. Now we make about a 30% to 33% margin on that purchase ore. So if we buy it for $100, we make $30 and it extends our mine life. One of the things, like the Guanacevi plant was originally built by the Mexican government in 1981 or 1982. Under that plant, when it got sold, 10% of that plant needs to be available for family operations to toll their ore. So some of it's in our control, some of it's out of our control, but ultimately us taking more allows us to continue to extend mine life, gives Luis and his exploration team time to continue to find resources as we move along, and hopefully we're at Guanacevi another 3, 5, 10 years.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, or maybe I forgot about the 30% profitability. So you're actually making money off of it, and I wasn't, I guess it's beyond profitability as well. It sounds like it's part of the agreement that you might have in place in terms of, giving access to some of these families. So.
Yeah. We have to give access, but it also has to be profitable. So there are gating items in that agreement that protect us as well. But ultimately, and there's a number of things when it comes to community relations, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of qualitative aspects of buying that purchasor. And we do a lot of work around it to make sure those claims are legit claims, et cetera, et cetera. But it is a profitable segment for us and extends our mine life.
Great. And then maybe one last question, Dan, talking about sort of unexpected cost. I see that your CapEx has increased now from 157 for the year to $181 million. At Kolpa, it's going to be $18 million additional CapEx. So would you categorize that as sort of unexpected cost, or is there really a benefit to it, a future benefit to it, whereby it might, you know, equate to over 2,500 tons per day or lower cost later on in terms of per ton? Could you maybe talk about that?
Yeah, no, that's very fair. So in that $18 million, there's about $5 million of overruns from putting that ball mill in place, recommendations from Peruvian authorities of what we have to increase for power consumption and substations, and then lifts required on the current tailings facility. Similarly, we've been running certain days at 2,600 all the way up to 2,800 tons per day, but obviously we don't have facility capabilities to continually run that for the next 2 or 3 years. By increasing the power substations, putting in a water treatment plant and our tailing filter systems, we're going from conventional tailings to dry stack tailings, we're trying to push that forward. That $18 million that we've added in is project expenditures we expect to happen this year, but it could end up getting pushed into next year. We don't start that work now. We'll be racing come 2030 to get it all finished so we can continue to fill our tailings dam with ore. So as far as your question of what's expected, what's unexpected, some of it was unexpected, as I say, overruns, which is about 5 of the 18, and then $13 million is us bringing things forward from 2027. There's another inside that. There's $3 million for accommodations, so new camp. And that's, again, we're losing or having high turnover in Peru because of all the informal miners that have been popping up with high prices. So we're building that out sooner than what we had planned to attract and retain talent. So it's something that we didn't take very lightly when we started looking at it, but also we see a lot of potential through our exploration programs that we've done there that, hey, this is a long-term investment. It's not something that's going to, we're going to be there well past the 8 years that we thought we had in our effectively model when we purchased it. We're going to be here 15, 20, 25 years, and we're going to make these investments now.
Great. Thanks, Dan, for answering all my questions. Very good answers. Thank you.
Thanks for the questions, Cos.
The next question comes from Alex Terentiew with National Bank. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. A lot of good questions asked here already. Maybe just a few follow-ups to dig into some of those. So starting with Kolpa, the additional spending here, this mine, I guess, since you guys bought it, has been performing operationally, I think, you know, pretty well. You got your expansion up and, production has been looking pretty good. But I think the offset has been, there's been a bit more spending, at least than I anticipated. So I'm just trying to get a sense of the spending this year. I mean, how should I think about longer term spending here? Is this kind of catch up spending that maybe you kind of didn't anticipate, or is sustaining going to be a little bit higher on this project or this mine forward? Just trying to get a sense of longer term expectations here.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair question. I'd say it's more focused on one time expenditures with regards to the expansion of going from effectively 2,000 tons per day to 2,500 tons per day. And when our management team that we inherited came through with their program, there's definitely things they missed from a conceptual standpoint that start peeling back the onion and go, well, hold on, there's not enough capacity from a power standpoint here. Hey, we're going to run out of tailings dam in 2029, 2030 if we don't start moving on this. So as we've taken control, and now we've been in control for just over a year, there's things that we have recommendations on, things that they ultimately missed. But most of that is actually one-time expenditures for the long-term viability of Kolpa, effectively putting the tailing storage filter presses in, going from wet stack to dry stack. That's a one-time thing. New accommodations, one-time item, new power substations, a new water treatment plant to bring their standards up. Some of these things that we, from a from an acquisition standpoint, we felt like we could live with for a while, but at these prices with these cash flows, it gives us the ability to make that investment now. And it's something we don't have to worry about in year three, year four, year five to push that out. And again, I'd point back to a lot of the work that Luis's team's doing and ultimately our Kolpa exploration team and what we're seeing. And I think our enthusiasm to get these investment projects done points to what we think the resource is ultimately going to be.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And do you have an estimate on when an updated resource and mine plan would be out for Kolpa?
Yeah, we expect it to be out by the end of the year.
End of the year. Okay, good. All right, and then just going back to Terra Nera, I know you talked about higher silver grades coming, you know, second half this year. Any higher gold grades coming with those as well? Or is it just
no, we're staying in Terra Nera. There are some pockets in Terra Nera, like even like I say, the drill results that we put out had 3-4 grams in some of that area. But ultimately, gold should hover around 2. It's the silver that we'll pick up.
Okay. And then just sticking with this one, you've had some really nice exploration results that you touched on, you know, earlier in the call, and you published, I guess, a couple weeks ago. Are you still thinking of putting out a new updated plan here for Terra Nera? I mean, obviously, the
yep.
mine plan has changed quite a bit with these silver prices and expiration. And
Okay. No, it's a very fair question. I don't know. We're not doing a new technical study and new mine plan won't be in that. So when we come out 2027, we'll have the guidance for the year with expected tons and ultimately grades, but we just put out ounces per expected produced. But we'll have a new resource for Terra Nera coming out at the end of this year. Luis right now has continued to drill Terra Nera. As I say, we finish that up. We're going back over to Luis. Then he'll bring that rig back to Terra Nera. It's just a question of when we cut off the Terra Nera drill results for the year-end resource.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks for the questions, Alex.
The next question comes from Soundarya Iyer with B. Riley Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks, team, for taking my question. So, again, most of the questions have been answered, but just one on Kolpa. So the throughput was higher quarter over quarter, but I think the grades were pretty slightly lower. So is that a sequencing as you ramp up to that 2,500 tons and, like, achieve steady state, or how should we think about the grade and unit cost trending from here?
Yeah, Sundaria, the grades actually quarter over quarter are relatively flat. Silver is down just a little bit. I would say that's under 5%, maybe 2 or 3%. And ultimately, our grades going forward for Kolpa are pretty flat. There's times where we have, we call it the yen pit. It's an open pit where it allows us to ultimately feed some lower grade material through if we're ever short on tons. But again, generally, I expect grades to be relatively flat for the next 6 months.
Thank you. That's helpful. And one on Pitarrilla spending. So $48 million budgeted and I think roughly $5 million spent. So what are the key areas that needs to be funded from here? And is it like back half catch up or we can roll some of that into 2027 without affecting the
timeline. Some of it's going to roll into 2027. We had always had a plan of having that feasibility study done in Q3. Internally, that may mean the front end of Q3, and externally, that means the back end of Q3. So because we're not going to have that feasibility study done until the end of Q3, it pushes back some equipment purchase, long lead items, deposits that would be required. Again, the gating item for Pitarrilla isn't necessarily the feasibility study from our standpoint. It's a permitting of the tailing storage facility that we're going through that process. And obviously, Mexico has been very difficult to get things through permitting, but we're seeing that kind of unlock over the last 6-7 months. And we hope that we can get the permitting of that TSF. Again, we already have a MIA that's in place, and we have our underground permitted, the plants permitted. So it's just our storing tailing storage facility, which is a dry stack, which is easier to ultimately get approved. It's a timing on all that, and we're definitely behind on what we expect to spend at this point in time.
Got it. That's helpful, Connor. Thank you. I'll turn back.
Thanks for the question.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. The next question comes from John Tumazos with John Tumazos Independent Research. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on all the progress. Should we think
Thank
of
you,
the $70 million of value-added tax refund like $70 million more cash as though your cash balances are $300 million?
Yeah, it's a very fair way to think about that. We expect to collect that in Q3, and it's on track. So we feel we've had a very good track record historically in Mexico in collecting our value-added tax back. We really haven't had any issues since 2010 or 2011 when we had to go through courts to receive it, but it's been pretty normal course over the last couple of years. There was a big buildup of value-added tax through the build of Terronera, but again, we expect to collect that in Q3.
How much of the cash balances are designated to finish Copa and finish Terronera? And to one significant digit, how much do you think Pitarrilla is going to take?
Ultimately, the cash balance on our balance sheet is not needed for the capital, sustaining capital program at Terronera or the expansion work at Copa. Copa is generating cash flow that covers off our capital expenditures. Similarly, at Terronera, we're generating cash flow that covers off some of these commission items with LNG or waste development too. And little jobs that need to get done. Effectively, our warehouse is going to get completed here in the second half. So the cash balance should be growing, especially from this point forward, and not earmarked for any of that. What it's ultimately earmarked for and the cash flow that we're going to generate this year, next year, and hopefully into next year is earmarked for the construction of Pitarrilla.
Do you know the rough magnitude of the capital Pitarrilla requires?
We don't have that yet internally from our external advisors who are putting together the feasibility study on Pitarrilla. We've always said publicly that we expect it to be somewhere between 500 or 600, but that's just a management estimate at this point. At the end of
Q3, how many tons per day is the mine and mill?
We expect the mill to be somewhere between 3,500 and 4,000 tons, but again, that will come out in our feasibility study.
Is it practical for me to root for you to buy in some stock at 7.5 to hold toward the conversion at 12.45 or to buy some of those bonds now when they might be depressed because your stock is depressed?
Well, that's for you to determine. I mean, ultimately, I can just talk to you about our business. People's investment philosophies are different amongst everybody, and they have different wants and needs and criteria, and we'll let you make that assessment, John, as opposed to us giving advice.
I'm sorry, do you, I'm not asking you for investment advice. Do you want to buy in some of those bonds when your stock is down?
I believe in our company wholeheartedly. So yes, I would always want to buy into our stock, especially with our price compared to our net asset value right now. There's a lot of things that factor into that. Mostly for me, it's my wife and how much she spends. But what I want to do is always different based on what's happening in my life.
Thanks and congratulations on your progress.
Thanks for the questions, John. I hope I dodged that last one well.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Dan Dixon for any closing remarks. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator, and thanks to our shareholders for listening in today. I think we have a lot to deliver in the second half of the year. We're well positioned to do that, and I look forward to the further growth that we have in Endeavour Silver for this year and next year. Have a good day.
This brings to a close today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.